Good morning. Hey, it's 11:11, Tim.
Make a wish.
Good morning, everybody. That's fun. I just looked at that. Thanks for joining us here on Dropping the Gloves. It's a good sign, I think, when we start the show at 11:11. It means we're all number one, right, Tim?
We're all number one. Everyone get along. Everyone love everybody, right?
That's right. Especially me. I'm always the eternal optimist. There's some good news on the show. Tim, I don't know if you wanted to talk about it, but Tim is a new uncle.
Yeah.
Very exciting. His brother had a baby this past weekend. Tim flew up to Boston. Tim, tell us all about it. This big baby.
Yeah, he's a big boy. Yeah, the baby was born on Friday afternoon, the 15th. Very excited. I flew up as soon as she went into labor and it all happened pretty quick, which is, I think, unusual for the first one because usually they take longer, but it was just a few hours. And so I saw him Friday night and again Saturday, and I flew back Sunday back to Charlotte. But baby's healthy. He's 22 inches long, 9.6 pounds. He's a big, big little fella. Mom's healthy. Brother's very excited. So all's good. Yeah. Really good.
That's exciting. It's very exciting. Everybody, it's a huge baby. 22 inches, almost 10 pounds. It's massive. Saw a picture. Very cute.
Yes. Very cute. Yes. Tim. Very excited.
How big were you, Tim, when you were born?
I was 2 weeks early. So I was like eight and a half, something like that. I probably still would have been, yeah, probably would have been bigger.
They say in the last, I think, what is it, month, each week the baby grows a pound. So if you would have went to term, you would have been 10 pounds, if not more.
How big were you? Were you always big?
I was 11 pounds. Yeah, 24 and a half inches. I was a monster.
24 and a half. Wow.
Yeah, I was a big guy. I was heavy, but I was long. You know what I mean? I stepped on the scale the other day. Oof. Eye-opening. 285 pounds.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I wonder if I'll hit 300 in my life.
This the heaviest you've ever been in your life?
No, the lockout, 2014. I got up to 293. I really packed on the pounds. And then we signed the contract. We're like, we got to go back to work. And I was like, oh boy. And I had to go on like this really crash diet where I didn't eat anything. And I was just cardio. Cause they gave you like a week and a half to get back to camp.
Weren't you like eating cookies at a Christmas party? And they're like, hey, we're going back.
Yeah. I was probably like drinking a few cocktails, some eggnog and cookies. And they're like, we got to go. And I was shocked. I thought we were going to lock out the whole season. I had planned for the whole season. I was hoping for the whole season. Because the players, the way we did it, we knew we were going to get locked out. So we were getting some kind of per diem weekly. So it's not like we didn't get any money. So we were starting to dip into that. So it's like we were getting a few $1,000 a month or whatever. Nothing groundbreaking, but enough. I had saved enough to that point. So I was like, a year off. Fantastic. Let's go. And then they're like, let's get back to work. Got to go to Buffalo. Make a good first impression. Here comes this fat slob into the locker room. It's like, hey, everybody. 290 pounds.
Stomp, boom.
290 I was at 6'8". I was a monster, an absolute monster. I lost it quick, though. Teddy Nolan, bag skates the heck out of you. Anyways, very good. Congratulations to you, your brother. I know he listens to the show. He's a big fan. So, yeah. What did you want to release the baby's name or you don't want to?
Yeah, no, I did. Sorry. It's Cormac, baby Cormac, which was a surprise. That wasn't one that we knew. It's not a family name or anything, but I think they like the idea of an Irish name. We were a very Irish family, but something that's a little bit different, but not too out there. So Cormac, which I think they're going to call him Mac. I'm going to call him Mac, which is a good, strong name. So
that is nice. I've never heard of that. I like the unique names. Very good. Very good. Always, always nice to see a new baby into the world. Speaking of babies, Connor Bedard making quite the impression at the Chicago Blackhawks camp. They did their interleague. Everybody does these prospect tournaments. I know Minnesota runs one. I know they do one up in Toronto. They do one here in Traverse City. They do them all over the place. It's the new thing where 6 to 8 teams come into town. You play some inter squad games. You do a little tournament, then you go your separate ways. It's good for the GMs just to get a glimpse of what the prospects, because it's hard to kind of gauge players when it's just inter squad games. It's nice to see them versus different teams. Intensity's high. These players want to make a good first impression. So it's fun. Well, Connor Bedard made a terrific first impression, Tim. Hat trick, first game versus the Minnesota Wild. I watched the goals. Everybody watched the goals. It's amazing. I just want to say this. The kid is amazing. I might be doubling down on my prediction of Connor Bedard getting 100 points. I think he might win the Hart Trophy for Pete's sake. He's that good. He's so incredible. He makes it look effortless, Tim. And I know he's playing against undrafted rookies versus these teams, and it's not the NHL caliber, this and that, yada, yada, yada. The kid's done it at every level. Everywhere he's gone. World Juniors. Where was he? The Dub, the Regina Pats. I don't know where he was. He's done it everywhere he's gone, Tim. And he just never disappoints. When the lights are the brightest, this guy just is a stud. He didn't even have to play in this tournament. He told the Blackhawks, he's like, I want to be treated by everybody else, like everybody else. So he goes to the tournament, just like an undrafted free agent out of Michigan Tech. And he's lighting it up. Good for him. I'm very excited. I don't know if I told you, I think I did. I'm working for the Blackhawks this year. I'm going to be tied to this guy's hip. I know a shooting star when I see one, Tim. And you've I just want to be sucked up into his gravitational pull. Take me with you, Connor. Take me with you to the top. Even if I don't get all the way to the top, just get me close. Because this kid's going to be arguably, potentially, the best who's ever done it. And I want to be there with him. I'll be like, I just watched that Elvis Presley movie. I'll be the colonel. I'll be the guy pulling the strings behind the scenes. I'll be the guy who's feeding him the pills. Get on that stage. And I'm getting do-re-mi, baby. So
that's Brian Windhorst, that guy with LeBron. Same thing. He just happened to be like a Cleveland beat reporter for high school in like 2006 or whatever, and just chased this kid his whole life. And now he's a well-known ESPN name just because of LeBron. There you
go. That's going to be me, John Scott.
Yeah,
Connor Bedard's just shadow, a big, imposing 290-pound shadow. It's going to be fantastic. But all kidding aside, this kid's unbelievable. Did you see the goals? They're all very similar, all three of them. What did you think of them?
Yeah, well, it's not just that, like, he scored three goals, but they weren't like rebounds or redirects or scrappy goals. He's controlling the puck, controlling the play. All three are snipes. Like, one is through traffic. I don't know how he even saw it. The second one, again, creating his own space and just right over the goalie's shoulder on a bad angle shot. And the third one is like, it looked like he was playing against, like, I know this is a joke, but like pylons. It was like guys weren't even moving. The goalie didn't move. They never saw it. He just took it and shoot. He loves to shoot it. He's a good player to watch for kids that they always hold onto the puck too long, or they try to make the fancy move, just get it and rip it. And he scores. It's crazy. So yeah, I don't know about 100 points, but he's going to put up some serious numbers this year.
Tim, his game will translate to the show. It really will. When you look at other younger guys, junior guys, guys coming out of college, it's like, oh, he's really strong, or he's really fast, or all this and that. That sometimes translates. But a lot of the times, you know, your strength gets matched, your speed gets matched. This guy's got a laser for a shot, and he gets it off quick. You can do that versus any competition. It's so easy for him. You look at all the shots. He disguises it well. He goes from outside to inside, and it's off his stick like that, and it's in the back of the net. It's unbelievable. I shot hundreds and hundreds of pucks a day. My shot sucks, Tim. It's so bad. And I spent 15 years trying to work on it. This kid, it looks so effortless. It's just amazing. And he does it. He's like 5'8". And his wrister is just so, so powerful. He'll never take a slap shot in the NHL. They're all going to be those little wristers. Why would he? They're so good. I'm amazed at these kids coming out of juniors and college and stuff. Just the torque, the speed, the puck coming off their stick is incredible. It's amazing. All right. Anything else you want to talk about, Tim, before we get into it?
Well, Adam Fantilli did the same thing on Saturday.
Who cares?
He also had a hat trick. He's the third pick. We said second last week. We were wrong about that. Third overall to Columbus. But yeah, I mean, the future is bright with these kids. Just like, again, it's an inter-squad scrimmage. Who knows? You know, it's not the real thing yet, but another just beautiful goals, dangles, and working through the D, and just very, very exciting.
Who went second?
Leo Carlson for Anaheim. Whoops.
Why would they not pick Fantilli?
Don't know. Couldn't tell you.
You don't know Verbeek?
He was a number one European prospect. So
I never trust a European. That's it. I'll just say it. You go North America, top five.
We've had lots of European guests on the show. You don't trust them?
Name one.
European guest, our last one, Jakubov.
Who? That's true. He's well, is Russia Poseidon, a part of Europe, though? Is Russia a part of Europe?
Yes, it is.
Not for long. You know what I mean?
Politics. Crazy.
It's politics, baby. We should get Putin on the show.
Yeah. You think he knows who you are? That's actually a good question. How closely does he follow the NHL?
He follows it fairly closely. And here's a story. I got invited to go to Russia by a few players, ex-players, and they wanted me to do a Russian tour because they would go over and you would jump on a train and you would go from stop to stop to stop. And the final stop would be to play a game with all the oil oligarchy and Vladimir Putin. I didn't decline. My wife declined for me, but they would tell me these stories about what goes on in Russia. And it's just it's the Wild West, Tim. And it makes the Wild West look like a G-rated Disney movie. Like it's machine guns. It's everything you can imagine. And I'm just like, no, thanks. But I got offered. And yeah, Putin's around. You get these oil money. You get these gangsters. It's crazy. It's absolutely bonkers that like a country like Russia exists. You know what I mean? I talk to fighters who sign in the K and all over, like guys like John Morassi, where you get into a fight and you go in your locker and there's $10,000 cash. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But then conversely, on the other side of the page, I wonder if you don't fight or you don't do good, you don't get paid. Kind of live by the sword, died by the sword, Tim. It's one of those deals.
Yeah, I would never go there.
No, it's not for you. It's not for the mentally weak. You would crumble. Russia is a strong man country. What's that?
Yeah, the kids these days and their mental problems. And
you're perfectly suited for right where you're at. Like you've hit the sweet spot in time where
in time and place. Yeah.
Oh, a beta male with just not a lot of ambition.
Oh, come
you've hit the sweet spot. You know what I mean? If you were born 200 years ago, dead by the time you're 14.
Is it important to you that you talk down to me like that? Is that like, does that help you when you say things like that?
Does it hurt when you hear the truth? I don't understand.
Beta male who would die in the woods 200 years ago.
I didn't say in the woods. Maybe in the woods. Maybe maybe in the city square. I don't know.
I would do just
Have you
fine.
Seen Gangs of New York?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Leo.
Tim, he wouldn't last. I would be the king of like some sick country. England, maybe. Oh man. I would have any generation, I would have been a force. Except this generation.
You were a force, Sean.
Toxic male energy. Oh, all right. Let's get to the central division. You know what I want to talk about? The Scott family's getting some chickens this week. I'm very excited. So I just talked to you before the show. I'm going to pick up a chicken coop. If any of our listeners have any tips of how to work a chicken coop, I think I'm going to get 5 hens. I have 2 roosters. This all happened to him in the last 2 weeks. It's a very, very quick happenings. Just send some tips in because I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how often do I get the eggs? How often do I clean out their coops? How often do I have to feed? Like, I don't know what's going on. What do I feed them? I'm just flying by the seat of my pants here. So anyways, send in some tips if our listeners, I know we have a lot of homesteaders. So send in some tips to me. How do you raise a chicken? Can I keep the chickens and the rooster in the same space? Or is it just going to be a free for all? You know? Club 54, Studio 54 type stuff. I don't want that. I want just a nice, orderly chicken coop. Right, Tim?
Yeah. Are the girls excited for it?
Oh, very excited. They want to get 7 hens, 1 for each kid. I mean, it's too many. So I think 4 to 5, I'm going to pick them up tomorrow. So we'll see how it goes. But yes, it's going to be interesting. Moving on, Central Division. We've done the Atlantic. We've done the Metro. Now we're moving west to the Central Division. All in all, a fairly lackluster showing last year from this whole division. Not very exciting. We're hoping for some, you know, greener pastures this year. Wouldn't you say, Tim, there's been some injuries. There's been some aging stars in this division. But I think we're starting to see signs maybe of some improvement this year. Who do you want to start with? And where do you want to go in the Central, Tim?
Let's start with who I think is the best team in this division and still probably one of the top 3 teams in hockey is the Colorado Avalanche. The big question for them, can they go back to being a cup contender, go on a deep run? Obviously disappointing showing in the playoffs for them last year. A lot of question marks. I mean, Landeskog is going to miss most of the season. They're quote unquote hopeful that he comes back for the playoffs. And this is after missing all of last season. So just a tough injury stretch for him. Some roster turnover there, but they added some nice pieces. They're still like Nathan MacKinnon is still a top 3 player Cale Makar is the best defenseman in the league. Like, they're still very, very good. So I'm hoping that they come back and they turn into a serious contender again.
Yeah, the more this team moves along with this core, do they just turn into the Washington Capitals, where they win one cup and they're always pretty good, but they can't seem to put it together again? And I hope that's not the case, because obviously these are great players, but it's just starting to look that way, where it's like, yeah, okay, they put it together. They won the cup 2 years ago, and then that was it. And they'll always be in the playoffs. They'll always be a contender, but they won't ever be the best. And I think that's going to be the Colorado Avalanche. And I think that's because Landeskog is injured and the salary cap's going to bite them in the butt pretty soon. You mentioned all the top guys. I like what they've done. They brought in Ryan Johansson. They bring in Thomas Tatar. You bring in Ross Colton. You bring in Miles Wood. You bring in Jonathan Drouin. All good players, right? All very valuable NHL players. Valerie Nichushkin, who knows what's going to happen with him? He's been very quiet. The NHL has been very quiet over his situation when they found someone passed out in his hotel room and there was text messages sent back and forth. He said he was going to delete their whole family. It's a Russian situation. So I just don't know what's going to happen there, but I don't know, Tim. I don't trust this team. There's talent all over the lineup, but for whatever reason, I just don't know. I don't know how this thing's going to end up. If I had to call it right now, I think they would be second or third in the conference and they would lose in the second round. I think that's their fate for the next 2 or 3 years. I don't see them as a contender in the Western Conference for the Stanley Cup as it stands right now. You got your captain out, your goaltending. Georgiev was good last year. Can he be that guy? I don't know. I really don't know. You bring in Ryan Johansson, who in my eyes has fooled everybody his entire career. He's this guy who everybody thinks is this really smooth, swift skating, big centerman who just kind of does it all and puts points on the board. Then when you look at his stats, you go, you know, he hasn't really put up many points in his entire career. He's making $8 million, but his highest point total in a season was 71. And that was back in 2014 and 15. And he's just been languishing in this 50-point, 60-point range for the last 6 years. And the last three, he's been not great. So is he what? What are you going to say, Tim? You're going to stick up for Johansson now?
Well, for $4 million, it's a pretty good deal, especially considering that you lost your 2C after winning the cup with Kadri. And that was a big problem for them, was the center depth last year. So you bring him in, he's going to fill that spot in. And you also have guys that can float around like Ross Colton. I mean, Rantanen can play the center as well. Drouin can play center. And so, like, I think that's an important piece that he's maybe a little bit overrated. He's a 55-point player average in his career, but I think it's a really important piece for them. And they obviously, like, you mentioned Tatar, like, he's been around for a decade now, and he hasn't really played with any elite players. And now he's getting the chance to. And so, being part of an actual cup contender, and being on the ice with, like, does he get a shot with McKinnon or Rantanen? Does he get a shot with Nichushkin or Lakanen? Like, getting him on the ice with those guys and on a power play with Makar or whatever, like, I think you could see a really strong kind of season from him.
The fact that you say he's never been with superstars is wild, since he played with the New Jersey Devils last year. It's just, then he played with the Vegas Golden Knights. He played with superstars with the Montreal Canadiens. Not superstars, good players. But yeah, I'll let that narrative slide. I don't know. I think they went out and they bought a lot of players who have a high potential, who have never really lived up to their billing, with Tatar, with Johansson, with Jonathan Drouin, and they're hoping to get the best out of those players by surrounding them with legit NHL talent. I think Jonathan Drouin gets the first crack at that top line with Rantanen and McKinnon. We'll see how that pans out. If he doesn't work, well, let's slide Tatar there. If that doesn't work, well, let's slide Miles Wood up there. If that doesn't work, well, let's slide someone else up there. I think they're going to give these guys all the chances in the world, and maybe something works. Maybe Jonathan Drouin, something clicks playing with these two studs in McKinnon and Rantanen. But I don't know. There's a reason. There's a reason these guys are available. That's all I'm saying. There's a reason Jonathan Drouin has bounced around and hasn't really fulfilled those expectations. The same goes with Ryan Johansson. The same goes with Thomas Tatar. If these guys had fulfilled their expectations, they wouldn't be available. So we'll see. You're right. They only need one to hit to fill out that top spot, to kind of just wait for Landeskog. Hopefully he comes back. But Tim, I don't know. They're a great team, don't get me wrong. But I think we saw the best in them 2 years ago when they won the cup, and I think people have figured them out. So moving on, Dallas Stars. I like myself some Dallas Stars. You know that. I know that. They're fantastic. What can we expect out of the Dallas Stars? What do they do this offseason, Tim?
This is the other team that I'm most excited about in this division. They added a couple of depth pieces. Obviously, they added Dadonov at the deadline last year, so this is their first full season with him. They added Matt Duchene, who's a similar, I think, player to Johansson that we just talked about. Craig Smith, just a little bit of a depth forward, a little bit of scoring pop. But I think the rounding out their secondary scoring is going to be really important for them. The other thing, too, is, and I tweeted this a few weeks ago, I think Heiskanen is in tune for a massive year. He had a big jump in points last year. We had 73, I think. But I think he's going to be over a point per game, close to like 90. Like I think this guy is just like 20 goals, 70 assists. I think he's going to be an absolute beast this year. So I'm really excited about Dallas. They have arguably a top five goalie in Ottinger. He's just a stud between the pipes. They have a solid defense. They have some great veterans with Pavelski and Ben and Sagan. I like this team a lot.
I do too. I really like this team. When you look at their roster on paper, they have arguably the best roster in the league. They have a first line that's proven. They've done it for the last 2 years, and hence Pavelski and Robertson. Second line, Wyatt Johnson, as he emerges to star. Dadonov fits in nicely on the right side. Ben had a good season last year, kind of resurrected his career. I think he put up 75 points or whatever in 80 games. Really stunk it in the playoffs, cost him a lot of crucial points. I think what it all comes down to is the elephant in the room. It's our two highest paid players. It's Sagan and Ben. Can these guys put together a season, especially Tyler Sagan? He has been absolutely invisible since he signed his big $9.85 million contract a few years back. He's done nothing. I know he got injured. He missed a whole season. He's back. He's played two full seasons now, Tim. Before the injury, before the big contract, he was a point per game guy. Since the contract, he's barely above a half a point per game. And he's making almost $10 million. Jamie Benn, he makes $9.5 million. The comparables in that range, Kucherov, Gaudreau, Stone, Point, Tkachuk, Rantanen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Legit superstars. If you replace even one of those two, Ben and Sagan, for one of those guys I mentioned, I feel like they have a banner in the rafters already. Maybe two, maybe three. That's how good this Dallas Stars team is. But when you waste $18 million on two guys and they do nothing for you, that's a huge, huge thing to overcome. So much like the Rangers with Lafreniere and Kako, these two guys are the pivotal players on this team. If they show up to play, if they play to their potential and to their contract, this is hands down the best team in the Western Conference. I don't care about McDavid. I don't care about McKinnon. I don't care about the reigning Stanley Cup champions, Vegas Golden Knights. This team has it all top to bottom. You mentioned Ottinger, top five in the league. Defense is outstanding. Heiskanen, Suter, Harley, Huck and Pa, Lindell, Lundqvist, they're all good. They're all big. They all move the puck well. The forward group is fantastic. If Sagan is playing to his potential, he's their third line center with Marchman and Duchene. That's a dangerous third line. You got Johnson, Dadonov, Ben, and your fourth line is just penalty killers. You got some offense there now with Craig Smith. I don't know. It's those two guys, Tim, for me. So if they show up, this is hands down the best team in the Western Conference. It really is.
Yeah, I could buy that. I could buy that. And really encouraging showing from Ben last year. So if he does that again, you get a little bit more from Sagan. You don't need him to be the point per game guy. I don't know how reasonable that is to expect at this point in his career, but if he's getting closer to like 70, I feel like this team is going to be dangerous. But the bigger question is, like, you know, they're going to make the playoffs. What do those guys do in the playoffs? And can Ben especially stay on the ice, stay out of the penalty box and not make any stupid decisions? I'm sure he would, as a captain, was pretty upset with himself for what he happened last year. And I'm sure it won't happen again, but it's the playoffs. I think that's really the only thing that matters for them.
Yeah. A team that I think next will take a few steps backwards will be the Minnesota Wild. Last year, they played great considering their salary cap, the players that they have, the talent that they have. They finished third in the Central, 103 points. It was a good showing for them. I feel like they are due for massive steps backwards. And I think the big thing to watch with this team is at the free agent trade deadline. who goes, who stays, what will this team look like next year come the deadline? I don't know. They have Zuccarello, they have Foligno, they have Hartman, Duhamie, Maroon, Goligoski, Fleury. They still have $14 million plus in cap hell, thanks to Parise and Suter, in dead money that they can't use. This team, Tim, I think is done. I think it needs to be blown up. You have good pieces in Kaprizov and Boldy. They're good pieces. Spurgeon, you have some good players there. I think if they just call this season a wash, start over next year, there'll be a little more money in the salary cap. They don't have any bad contracts on this team, but they just need to have a little facelift. I think you kick the can the next year, you trade all those guys, you get some draft picks, and you just say, you know what, this is what we get for those bad contracts. Thank you, Chuck Fletcher, Cliff Fletcher, whoever, Chuck Fletcher. We're going to be bad this year. Billy Guerin knows it. He's going to trade those guys. It sucks for Kaprizov. It sucks for Boldy. Or not, Kirill. But you have to pay the piper at some point. I think last year they played over their skis a little bit. I don't know. Am I wrong about this Wild team, or do you think they go a different direction?
You're not wrong. I think they're a better team than you're giving them credit for, where they can probably compete for a playoff spot, but I don't know that it's going to get you anywhere. And with all these expiring contracts and just the cap situation, it probably does make more sense to be a seller. And I'm going to list those names again, because I think these guys are really, really valuable. Like, they'll be sought after pieces at the deadline. All these expiring contracts, Zuccarello, expiring contract, Foligno, expiring contract, Hartman, Goligoski, like those are exactly the type of players that GMs salivate over in March and February. So I feel like it'll be there'll be sellers most likely, unless they surprise us. But with $14 million in dead cap space, there's really not much you can do.
Yeah, Ryan Hartman's a guy who is just always, he I can't wrap my head around him. I know I make fun of him all the time. Zuccarello gave me a hard time when he was on the show saying, yeah, I heard what you're saying about Hartman. I almost didn't come on the show. He's your 1C now for the last few years. He doesn't put up massive points, but he brings that sandpaper, that grit to the lineup that GMs love, coaches love. What do you do with him? He's 28 years old. He's been around. He hasn't really been able to stick. He spent 4 years with the Hawks, a couple years with the Preds, now 4 years with the Wild. Do you invest in him long term? Is he your guy? I don't think he's a 1C. I've said it up and down. I think he's a 2C, maybe a 3. That's his sweet spot. But out of all these guys, Tim, which pieces do you see the Wild hang on to, and which ones, obviously, do you let go?
I think you hang on to Hartman. They obviously like him. They've given him a lot of responsibility. I don't know. I mean, how much of that is Guerin, because he was there before Guerin was the GM, but I feel like he's a guy that you for sure probably hang on to. Zuccarello is 36. I didn't realize he was that old. So I think he's gone. Foligno, I think they hear offers on him. I think they probably like to keep him, but again, he's a guy that teams are going to want. If you can add Marcus Foligno to your top six at the deadline, like that's a great pickup. And then Goligoski is just a career suitcase, right? So he'll be traded. He'll go somewhere else and help another blue line. But I think Hartman's the guy they'd like to keep.
Yeah, I just look at what you could get an ROI on this guy. I think the highest return would be Hartman. He only makes 1.7. He's still 28 years old. He will be one of those guys in the playoffs that will win you a series. You can plug him in on the third line. He will win matchups because he's so valuable. He does a little bit of everything. I know we say that a lot. He's a five-tool player. He fights, he hits, he wins face-offs, he scores, he backs check. He does everything. He kills penalties, power play. Him and Marcus, I think, are the two valuable pieces in this group. So, gosh, I feel bad because I played for the Wild. I came up with them. I still love going there, but they need to just kind of reset. And we talked about Fleury last episode where they're doing him dirty. They need to just trade him and be done with him and just not let him languish on the bench. He's too good of a goalie for that. Give him some time. Send him to a contender. He deserves it. All right, moving on. St. Louis Blues. This is a hard one to approach because they have a lot of good players. There's a lot of good pieces there. But we talk about taking a step back. We talked about the Minnesota Wild. Is there... if there's one team in this division who I feel like could come last place, it's the St. Louis Blues. And that's crazy talking about a division that has the Arizona Coyotes and the Chicago Blackhawks in it. Two of the worst teams in the league last year. St. Louis, in my eyes, is going to be a train wreck this year. You don't get rid of Jordan Binnington. You lose Kevin Hayes. Or not, sorry, not Kevin Hayes. You don't change your defense. Your core is gone. Tarasenko, Schwartz, Ryan O'Reilly, everybody's gone. I don't know, Tim. I don't know. What do you see from the St. Louis Blues this year?
Well, they lost a lot of good players, like you said. Most of their team that won the cup is gone, but they have some really good young players. And actually, they tweeted out they're going to announce their captain today. So I don't know who that's going to be. Probably Braden Schenn, if I were to guess.
Jordan Kyrou, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Parayko and Schenn have been wore the A last year. Yeah. Is it Binnington? Does Binnington wear the C?
In the locker room.
Yeah. So I mean, Kyrou and Robert Thomas signed identical contracts a year ago. They were putting up some really solid numbers and a little step back last year. I don't know. You're right. This team could be a second round, out, or they could be last place. And this doesn't really seem to be an in between. So they're not gonna be down the middle. They're gonna be good or terrible.
Yeah, I just look at other teams. A lot of the teams in this division, their strength is on the back end. Dallas Stars have a great defense, great goaltender. Minnesota Wild, I like their defense. Winnipeg Jets, Nashville Predators, the St. Louis Blues, I feel like their defense has been together forever. They're always constantly injured. They're always not getting up to their expectations. Nothing has changed from last year to the year before to the year before. The names are sexy. Falk, Krug, Parenko, Letty, Scandella, Bortuzzo. But they're old. They're all injured, multiple surgeries. They're all never healthy. I just feel like they're not good anymore. Colton Parenko, the highly sought after 6'6" puck moving defenseman who was the stud when they won the Stanley Cup in 2018. He doesn't stink now, but he's a 5'6" defenseman. He makes 6.5. Torrey Krug, never healthy. Justin Falk, like, he's okay. Right. I feel like their weakness is their back end and their goaltender. They're complacent. They're old. They're slow. They're not motivated. This is going to be their weakness. These guys don't want to play defense. They don't want to go back and get a puck when it's dumped into their corner. It's an issue. And this is their defense for the next 4 or 5 years. Letty, Parenko, Krug, and Falk are signed, all of them, to 2025-26. Parenko, for Pete's sake, is signed until 29-30. So this is the reason why this team will struggle. And of course, Jordan Binnington. The guy makes $6 million. He signed to 26-27, and he's an absolute psychopath. So, and he's not a good goaltender. Like, I get it. If you're like quirky and you go off the rails like a Ron Hextall used to do. Ron Hextall was terrific. Last year, Binnington, his goals against 3.31, his save percentage 0.89. Like, you stink. You're bad goalie. So I fully see St. Louis being the worst team in this division next year. All right, moving on. Speaking of the worst team in the division, the Arizona Coyotes. It's not often, Tim, where I'm optimistic about a team, especially about the Arizona Coyotes. I have a well-documented history of just dogging this team for fun sometimes, just because I can. I am optimistic about this team. Not optimistic in the sense that they're going to compete for a Stanley Cup or they're going to be in the mix for a playoff spot, but I am optimistic about where this team is headed. I think they did a good job in the offseason. They didn't overextend and signed a superstar like Taylor Hall all of a sudden and just label themselves contenders. No, they did some smart tertiary moves. They signed some vets to mold these young guys and to give Clayton Keller and Nick Schmaltz some people to play with. And they went out and they got a good defenseman for the cheap, who was arguably one of the best defensemen on the market, who just couldn't find money. They didn't lock themselves in any long-term deals with free agents when they have no business to. They made smart business moves that they can get away from if it doesn't go, or they can trade if it doesn't go the right way. I don't know. You bring in Matt Dumba, you bring in Sean Durzi, you bring in Troy Stetcher, all good veteran defensemen. And they all get one-year deals, and you can trade them at the deadline if it's not working out. You bring in Nick Bjugstad, I think is a good, very underrated forward who just plays third line minutes, but just skilled. You bring in Zucker, who's played with some of the best players in the world, with Crosby and Malkin, and he played with Kaprizov, and he's played with all these guys. He knows how to keep up with the stars. And you bring in Kerfoot, a guy who's been around the league. I think it's smart, Tim. It just gives the kids, who are all the kids that these guys have to mentor, Tim?
Well, the one I'm most excited about is Logan Cooley, who was drafted third overall last year, 2022, and then went back to college, Minnesota, right? But he was like, they're already saying it in a redraft, even a couple of months later, like he would go number one overall in that draft. So he's coming in for as a rookie this year, which is very exciting for them, as well as Gunther, Michelli, Hayden. Like all these guys are 21, 22, 20 years old. Very, very talented. They're going to get real opportunity. You're going to see at least two of them in the top six, getting actual minutes, getting power play time. And like you said, it's not like they're going to be contending for a playoff spot probably, but they're going to be like getting like really, really good experience, really good NHL seasoning. And for the first time, maybe not the first time, but like it's, you see their future. You see where this organization is headed. You can kind of buy into these kids progressing. And in the past, it was always like, well, yeah, they got these young players, but they always have to trade them because they can't afford them. I don't think that's going to happen this time. It feels like this is the group that's going to come up together and I don't know, move their franchise forward and not turn into the next Dylan Strome and all these other young kids that they had to trade as soon
Domi
as they turned 24.
And Duclair and all these guys.
Yeah,
I hope I so like, because
yeah,
you have good pieces. You know, you got Kraus, you got Keller, you got Schmaltz. The defense still, you know, there's some work that you need to do there after getting rid of Chychrun. But I agree with you. You see some pieces that could potentially turn out to be very, very good hockey players. But yeah, only time will tell. I think this is a big season for them. Does Clayton Keller improve up for last season? Last season he had 86 points. Does he? What's the over under? Is there more or is there less?
Well, that's kind of one of the things I'm keeping an eye on. The 37 goals, 86 points. Can he do better? Who is he? Is he a legit superstar? Can he drive a line? He showed last year that he could. And so if you're giving him chance to progress with Logan Cooley and Dylan Gunther and seeing those kids get to play together, I think he could be a 100-point player. So I really like what I saw from him. I think, yes, I think he gets 40 goals this year.
That would be exciting. Yeah, it'll be neat to keep an eye on Arizona because usually they're just an afterthought. All right, moving on. Nashville Predators. Like, what do you want to talk about with this team, Tim? They got a great goaltender. Great defense. What else is there to say about the Predators?
It's weird because I've seen the Predators on a few lists of like, I don't know, just breakout teams or underrated teams that are going to surprise people. I don't see it. I really don't see it. I mean, when you got Juicy Saros, like he's going to be a legit, he's going to keep you in games. If you put it like a middle of the pack goaltender there, this is the bottom 10 team. But they're with him, they're, you know, right in the middle. And so I feel like they could surprise some people. They're not going to be an easy team to play against, but there's not that much to get excited about.
What's the update on Philippe Forsberg? He got hurt last year. Any update on him?
He's healthy now. He's back to full health as of last week. He's on the IR still technically, but he should be ready to start the season.
Yeah, they bring in Ryan O'Reilly. They have some pieces there, but I agree. I don't think this team scares anybody. They will be good. They will make the playoffs, you know.
You think?
I do. I really do. I think in this conference, in this division especially, they will be a hard out. When you got Josi, when you got Saros, and you got Philippe Forsberg, those are three pretty solid pieces to play around. So, you know, they'll be there. They'll be a third seed in this division, and they'll make the playoffs, but I think they'll bow out in the first round. The interesting thing with all these teams, compared to the Metro, compared to the Atlantic, where they're locked in long-term to a core group of guys, you know, Ottawa, Toronto, Buffalo, all of them, New Jersey, New York, down the list, everybody's locked into their guys long-term. All of these teams, nobody's locked in. It's a free for all. Like what this team looks like, the Nashville Predators in the next 3 years could be completely different. Every one of their players, their contract's up in 2 years, except for Ryan O'Reilly and Roman Josi. You could theoretically, Tim, have 10 new forwards on this team next year. You got Trenin, Tomasino, Perasin, Gurriev, Novik, all these guys. I don't know what their names are. I've never heard of any of them, really. I've heard of them, but they're either a UFA or an RFA. Over three quarters of their forwards. The same goes for the defense and the same goes for the goaltending. It's just amazing how all these teams, they don't have a path forward. There's so many question marks for this franchise. I can't imagine being the new GM. You take over from Poli, who has been just there since the inception of the Predators. You bring in Barry Trotz. This guy's been around the block, always been a coach though. You know, you give him the reins for this team. He looks at what he has. He's like, where do I go with this franchise? There's a lot of unanswered questions. You bring in Andrew Brunette, obviously had that DUI situation when he was with the Florida Panthers, got let go, went to New Jersey last year. He's the new head coach. We'll see how this franchise does. But yeah, I think they make the playoffs. They have too many good players who are in their prime to not make the playoffs. Sorry, moving on. Chicago Blackhawks. We talked about the Bedard at the top of the show. What else is there to say about this team other than Bedard?
It's Bedard, Bedard, Bedard. The two questions, obviously, first is how many goals, how many points does he get? Second question is how good can he make this team? Because, I don't have it in front of me, but like pretty much overnight, the Capitals and the Penguins became playoff contenders out of nowhere because of what Crosby and Ovechkin did. And so can Bedard be on that level and bring them out of the abyss into contending? And I don't think, and this is not a knock against Bedard, there's just not enough there. You know what I mean? Like, he'll get Taylor Hall and he'll have some chemistry. And I don't know who they're planning on putting on that line with those guys, but I think it's just Bedard. And he doesn't seem to be bothered by the pressure or the spotlight or the attention. And so it'll take a lot of pressure off the rest of the team too. And I feel like you, as a Blackhawks fan, you can't be frustrated when Bedard scores 40 goals and you lose 50 games. Like, don't be surprised when that happens, because it's not a great team, but it's still very exciting to see what he's going to do, and not just the numbers, but the highlight reel stuff he's going to do, which he's already done. So that's kind of what I see for them.
Yeah, they got Lucas Reichel, their former first round pick, who will slide inside Connor Bedard and then Taylor Hall on the other side. So it's not a bad first line for the Chicago Blackhawks, but I think their weakness is the back end. You know, when you look at this defense, there's a lot that needs to be done. You got Murphy and Tenorti and Seth Jones and Zaitsev. It's just, it's not a defense that really instills fear in the opposition. You see this lineup and you're like, okay, I know where their weakness is. We're going to dump it in. We're going to attack them off the rush. These guys are susceptible to a lot of things. So it's an issue. You know, you're not going to go from last place to a contender overnight. There's going to be some growing pains. Like Peyton Manning, his first year, I think he won 3 games. He threw a million interception. So it takes some time to become a contender, but the pieces are there. You get Connor Bedard. He is a needle mover, like we talked about, but it's going to be a bad season next year. I think everyone will be focused on growing Connor Bedard, making sure he's comfortable, making sure he's healthy, making sure he's protected. That's why you bring in a Corey Perry, a Nick Foligno, a Taylor Hall. These guys will be a good mentor group for Connor Bedard. But yeah, don't expect them to make any noise. I think they'll be in the bottom of this division. So, but it'll be a fun team to watch. All right, moving on, the last team, Winnipeg Jets. Lots of question marks with this team. Much like the St. Louis Blues, much like the Minnesota Wild, what is this team going to do at the deadline? Who is going to show up for the Winnipeg Jets? I think they answered some questions in this offseason by letting Blake Wheeler go, their captain, for years and years and years. He's gone. That distraction is gone. They name Adam Lowry the captain. Great. Love that pick. What happens come the deadline? Mark Scheifele, Connor Hellebuck are the two primo players on this team. What happens? Scheifele's your best player. Hellebuck is arguably top 3 goaltender in the league. He's been doing it forever. I think he makes up for a lot of mistakes that this team makes. He's a fantastic goaltender. What happens, Tim? Can this team finally just either show up or go away? I feel like every year we talk about this team. Oh, they got great potential. They got a 40-goal scorer in Kyle Connor. They have great defensemen. Morrissey, Nate Schmidt. They got pieces. Eller's been a stud for years in this league. Mark Scheifele is so incredibly good. He's on a great contract. And then they just stall out and they stink and they don't make the playoffs or they lose in the first round. Where do you see this season going for the Winnipeg Jets?
The Jets could co-star with the Islanders on a TV show called Teams I Don't Care About. Like, they're just so, like, I'm trying to get like excited for them, and there's not that much going on. I love me some Kyle Connor. I love me some Nikolai Ehlers, friend of the show. Josh Morrissey had a monster season last year. Hellebuck had a great bounce back season after being a little bit lackluster the year before, and I only remember that because he was on my fantasy team and he was terrible. But like, are they going to contend? Probably not. There's also this unknown of like what locker room problems might exist. because there's been rumblings around this for years. And how much of that was, not that it was Blake Wheeler's fault, but if he's out of the picture, do these problems fix themselves? Is it a culture thing? Is it an organization thing? You've heard those rumors for years. And so I don't know where this team goes from here. I wish I had a better answer. I think they trade some players. I think Scheifele's gone. I think Hellebuck's gone.
Yeah, I think you have to get rid of those two guys. I don't think they're a contending team by any means in this conference, let alone this league. So Kevin Cheveldayoff somehow still has a job in this league. He's been with the Jets forever. They haven't done anything, really. They've never made it to the Stanley Cup Finals. I don't even think they made the Western Conference Finals. With all the talent that they've had while he's been the GM, it's amazing. They still can kind of just let him do what he does. So you got to trade Scheifele, you got to trade Hellebuck, and then you kind of just reload because you have good pieces. I feel like you won the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. You bring in Iafallo, you bring Vilardi in, you get a draft pick, you lose Dubois and all that noise that comes along with him. Those are good players. You have a good team. There are some pieces there for you to do a quick rebuild on, but you have to nail the Scheifele and Hellebuck situations. These are very crucial to your development and to where you go as a franchise. So we'll see what happens. I like Rick Bonus as a coach. We'll see how he kind of handles all the controversy that's going to happen this year, because they won't be good early on, but maybe they will. I don't know. I don't envy GMs in this situation. I don't envy who's the guy in Toronto, Brad Treveling, and I don't envy Kevin Cheveldayoff, because Winnipeg could potentially be there at the deadline and Toronto will definitely be there. What do you do with your UFAs? It's such a crucial decision. And our listeners, put yourself in their shoes. If you're hunting for the playoffs, if you're in the game and you're a GM, you have to save your job. Do you trade these guys or do you keep them and then lose them at the end of the year? It's a momentous decision to make for not only yourself, because you have to save your own job, right? But then you got to worry about the franchise long-term. I don't know what I would do. Just say Winnipeg's third place in the Central, Tim. What do you do? Do you trade Scheifele? Do you trade Hellebuck?
No, because Hellebuck could win you a series or two. You know what I mean? Like him alone.
Can he win you four series?
Well, no, but maybe if you add some pieces at the deadline, if you feel like he can get you there. But I don't know. How many playoff games has Kyle Connor played? How many playoff games has Mark Scheifele played?
Yeah, they've made the playoffs a handful of times. They had their big run in 2017-18, but since then, like in 2021 in the bubble, they won one round. Last year, they got knocked out in five. 19-20, they got knocked out, swept in four. Last year, they didn't even make the playoffs in 21-22. So they haven't done anything in the last 5 years. Like, can you trust him? I know he got 47 goals 2 years ago, 31 last year. I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think about. Put yourself in their shoes to see what you would do, because I go back and forth on it all the time. I really do. Anyway, moving on. Speaking of coaches, Mike Babcock. I want to touch on this very briefly. I want to apologize. I was wrong. Well, I don't say I was wrong. I didn't have all the facts, but things are coming out slowly but surely. This guy's a weirdo, Tim. He's an absolute weirdo. He deserves to be let go or resigned or whatever happened. If everything that's said to have occurred has occurred, it's just, he's a weird cat. I thought the cell phone situation was in his office. They shared a couple photos of their families and that was it. But allegedly he had people over to his house in the off season. He took the kids' phones, the young kids, 18-year-old prospects, first rounders, second rounders. We don't know the players. And he just rifled through them. And then he just tells them to leave. He says, come on over for lunch. They don't even have food. It's a weird thing to do. And then other stuff is coming up about him telling people they're not going to play in the NHL anymore and this and that, which isn't that uncommon. Lou Lamoriello said that to me when I finished with the All-Star game. I saw him in Toronto. He's like, yeah, don't bother. Like, you're done. Oh, that's a strange thing to say, Lou, but it's just a creepy, weird thing to do by Mike Babcock. So I don't know. If all the things are true, then yeah, he should be gone. It's just, he's almost like psychopathic tendencies, like serial killer stuff, where he gets some enjoyment of this. It's very strange. Tim, you could relate to this a little bit.
Well, because of you, because you're the bully in my life, right?
No, you're a psychopath.
Well, I'm glad you said that. And yeah, I think he's a narcissist. I think he's a bully. I think he's just, I don't know. He's a bully. It's really the best word for it. And so I'm glad he's gone. I think the players are better off. I think the stories are all true. And I guess one question that is kind of being floated around now is, why'd you hire him in the first place? And Yarmo basically said he believed in second chances. He knows he's a good coach. He wanted to see it work. And now people are calling for him to be on a short leash too. What do you think about that?
I don't know. Like, you can't predict someone's going to do this. You know, it's not Yarmo's fault. Babcock was a successful coach in this league, but obviously he's not anymore. He shouldn't be around. It seems like anybody. He shouldn't be around anybody. But I don't know. Yarmo should not be fired. Babcock should be let go. What happens to his contract? Because he resigned. Does all that money just go back? I don't know.
Because he was getting paid by the least until this year too, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Interesting. And Biz made this point too. I hope that, like, we can just put this behind us, because the players don't deserve to keep getting asked about this either.
You're right.
They did nothing wrong. So hopefully this.
But I was wrong. You know, when there was smoke, I didn't know how much fire there was. There's a lot of fire. This guy was terrible. He does not deserve to be a coach in the NHL. So yeah, I'll chalk that one up in the L column. Good on Spit and Chicklets. They were right on it.
A lot of credit to Biz. A lot of credit for you for acknowledging that. So
takes
credit all around.
I guess everybody's getting credit. All right, everybody. We'll have a good, what day is it? Tuesday? Have a good Tuesday. We'll talk to you later this week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.